Welcome to the quarterly audio series of the North & Shantz Consulting Group. We call this series Straightforward, and it's designed to provide you with direction for your future. In this edition, Roger welcomes his guest, Lynette Meck, an affiliate consultant of North & Shantz Consulting Group. Roger and Lynette will be discussing Lynette's leadership journey. Now from the North & Shantz Consulting Group, here's Roger North.
I have had a couple of experiences very recently that have forced me to think once again about the essential question of what is most important for a leader. I was having a conversation with a good friend of mine, runs a substantial organization, and he called to discuss a strategic move that he felt was very important and potentially very impactful for his organization. But he didn't call about the strategic move. He called rather about how his employees, his followers, would respond emotionally to that strategic move. And we had a wonderful conversation around the expectations that the employees had of him as a leader and about the way in which he goes about taking care of his people. And then I had another much more difficult experience lately in which a very good friend and client of mine died unexpectedly in an accident. And he was a leader. He was a leader in the real, true definition of the word. And over the last couple of years, the way he rolled out his leadership to his people was to remove the large majority of tasks from his leadership role and replace them with being available to be with his people as a leader. And so it got me to thinking, Lynette, about whether the number one and most important role of a leader is simply to understand and meet the needs of his or her people. What do you think about that?
I think that's absolutely right, Roger. I've always felt for any leader, their first obligation, their first responsibility is to be there, to listen, and to care. That may not sound very concrete, but I think you can't just listen, because if you listen and you don't follow through in some way or stay in touch with people, it doesn't mean anything.
Sure.
But to care, you follow through on things that you hear from that employee. And that could be something that they're dealing with at a personal level. It could be their work performance. If they're having a difficult time, or if you hear them talk about not feeling appreciated or valued, you pay attention to that.
Absolutely.
And you store it in the back of your mind, ready to pull out when there's an opportunity to let that person know in what ways you do appreciate them in particular.
And when we talk about that topic, for me, it seems so obvious and so important. And yet the challenge for me, and I know for many other leaders, is how do we place the type of importance on that we need to place, that is connecting to people and understanding their needs and responding to them appropriately when we have so many tasks to do. How do you handle that, Lynette? How do you get the appropriate balance between the obvious tasks, the pieces of paper, the meetings you need to attend, the strategies you need to carry out, with just being in touch with and supporting the growth challenges of your people?
It is very hard. It's not something that one can say, this is what I do, and do it and know that you're doing it well on a daily basis. I am constantly asking myself, probably at the end of every day, whether I've done that effectively. And I can almost always backstep over my day and find places where I realize then someone made a statement or said something that I could have followed through on, and I did not.
The missed opportunities are the ones that we need to come back and follow up on. And what I find for myself is that there's many of those opportunities every day. There's never a shortage of those opportunities. The shortage is in my commitment to be available to respond to them when I think that some kind of task or something that I've set out on my to-do list is somehow more important than that. And I fall into that trap all too often.
It takes a lot of commitment, and it takes remembering too, because There are so many things in the rush of the day and the urgent things that come up that you cannot stop and address on the spot. And then it becomes an act of remembering and knowing when and how to get back to someone.
And we live in an urgency culture. I think particularly business visits itself on me as an urgency culture. And I think the question about urgent and important, which is a conversation that we've all had at one point or another, is an extraordinarily important one to keep in mind. It's just there are urgent things that need to be done on a day-to-day basis, but not to treat things that are not urgent as urgent, because then it takes away from the time that we need to address the important.
Yes, I know about that. Anyone who works in healthcare, like in a business, will know that the increasing demands on people who work in healthcare regarding regulatory things, compliance issues, can quickly get in the way of the kind of care that you want to give to people. And so it just becomes an added burden in trying to keep all of that in balance.
I would think that would be one of the environments that most encouraged an urgent response to almost anything, because you're so often in the responding to urgency business. Being in the healthcare business would be very challenging as far as urgent and important is concerned.
It really is.
Lynette, I've been remiss in introducing you. We're well into our conversation here, and I haven't even introduced you yet, so I'll take this privilege to do that. Lynette Meck is Director of Human Resources at Philhaven Behavioral Healthcare Services and also a member of the executive team there. But more importantly to us, she is an affiliate consultant of North & Johnson. We're just thrilled, Lynette, to have a little corner of your time where you can bring that to bear for the benefit of our client base at North & Johnson. So welcome to Straightforward.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Lynette, give us a little life sketch, if you would, and then kind of weave that into your career. You and I were talking, and you've had some interesting places where you've lived and certainly some interesting leadership roles over the course of your career. Love to hear a little bit about that.
I grew up in a large family. I was the oldest child of a family with 8 children, and I think that's where, although unknown to me at that time, is probably where my first leadership inclinations began to develop.
I'll bet.
I heard every day, if not verbally in other ways, as the oldest, you need to set an example,
mm-hmm.
you need to be a model, and
mm-hmm.
you need to help take care of the children.
And how would the other 7 say you did with that example thing?
Oh, well, you would have to ask them.
Well, maybe I'll have that group on next.
I do remember some interesting conversations where I was called bossy or the boss. So there was that side of it growing up.
Do you still see typical first child birth order behaviors in yourself?
I really do. Yes, I think, and I'm not real well versed in what all those behaviors are, but I do know that for an oldest child in a large family where you are asked to take a lot of responsibilities,
mm-hmm.
you do develop certain approaches to life and decisions and work that might be different.
So responsibility would be a theme that came out of your growing up years that has had an influence on the leadership roles that you've had as an adult. Is that accurate?
Yes, I think responsibility and accountability.
Mm-hmm. How did that accountability come in your growing up years? Did you actually feel like you were accountable for some of the things that went on in the family as the oldest child?
I did. I began to work outside the home when I was 14 years old, cleaning a motel.
Okay.
And it was clearly to help support the family financially. What I earned from that, I gave to my parents.
Oh,
and I never resented that, because I felt more or less at one with my parents in that need to make ends meet. And I was happy to be able to help in that way.
The responsibility, accountability thing started at a very young age. Was your family a farm family?
My family was a farm family.
Okay. Here in Lancaster County?
Here in Lancaster County.
Okay. So the work ethic got burned in early, huh?
The work ethic was burned in early.
But I know that you had an opportunity to get away from Lancaster County to a place, New York City, that was probably very different. How did that come about in your life?
That's an interesting story. I think when I was growing up, I had only really one thought in mind for a young girl, a young woman, and that was to get married and have a family.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't consider college for that reason, one of the culture and the environment I was in, and I also would have never dreamed of being able to afford paying for college.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But we were invited when we were very young and planning to be married to join a volunteer service program with our church. My husband and I decided to do that, and we went to New York City, where he worked with what was then a gang of guys in the streets, and I worked at New York University Medical Center. and had a paying job. Some of the people in the volunteer program had paying jobs that would help support the other volunteers who were doing jobs like my husband on the street.
So you were there almost as a team, where you weren't just supporting you and Jerry, but you were supporting an overall team of people that was there in voluntary work?
That's right.
Okay. Early lesson in teamwork.
That was an early lesson in teamwork.
Yeah.
That's right. But there was a point where there were 17 of us living in a 4-story brownstone house in Manhattan.
Early lessons in communal living.
Very early lessons in communal living.
That were just an extension of your growing up years if you grew up in a house of 10.
Oh, that's right. I think that adjustment was easier for me than had we moved away into a house where we would have been alone and by ourselves.
Sure. It's more familiar to you, I guess.
It was more familiar. Although I cannot say that Manhattan was more familiar to me than what the farm was where I grew up.
What are your early memories of moving from a farm setting here to a cosmopolitan setting like New York?
The earliest memory that I have from that was one of feeling maybe just a little bit traumatized when I got there.
Sure.
I do remember my first encounter with a person on the street who was asking for money and just not quite knowing what does one do because I'd always been taught to be considerate and kind and helpful and compassionate. But there were so many people in that situation, and I looked to the person who was with me, and they said, well, in the city, you learn a kind of city snobbishness. That was a brand new thought to me, and it's one that I struggled with for a long time.
Lynette, at some point, you came back to, I think if I'm correct in your chronology, you came back to Lancaster and then went back to New York a second time, and there was some reasoning that you and Jerry had behind that. Can you tell us a little bit about what your family's thinking was when you made those different changes?
Yes, there was one other change wrapped up in that journey, too. When we left our 2-year stint in New York City, we actually moved to Virginia, where my husband went through college and graduated.
I see.
After he was through college, we moved back to Pennsylvania, and our children were born, and he was working here while I took care of the children. And we talked a lot about our experience in New York City and how that had shaped us and changed so many of our perceptions in life. And we thought that we would like our children to have that experience sometime, too. One doesn't just pick up and move any day to New York City, but with that in mind, we, of course, talked about that. And then the door did open for us to move back there when my husband was offered a job as executive director of a residential home for young women. And I had decided during that time that I also wanted to get a college education and had been taking some classes a course at a time. And now that we were in New York, the educational opportunities just multiplied. We found a school about 4 blocks from the house where we were living, and I enrolled there in that program. And in 3 years, then I finished my undergraduate degree. This gave our children an opportunity to go through elementary school in the public school system in the Northwest Bronx. They had a wonderful experience there. In fact, later, when both of them needed to write their autobiographies for admittance to college, they looked back on their time in New York City in their elementary school years as a very defining moment in their lives.
Very formative for
them. Very formative.
Were the schools that they had attended at that point highly diverse, racially integrated?
They were very diverse and integrated. When we would go to an assembly at their school, it was always a thrill to see these children on the stage from all over the world. The principal would make a point of noting that what we had represented on the stage at any one time were children from as many as 25 countries of the world.
Little mini United Nations in every class.
Like a little mini United Nations.
Yeah, what a great exposure for your children at a young age. At some point, you came back then to Lancaster, attracted, I presume, by a career opportunity. Would that be accurate?
That is correct. In fact, I received a call while we lived in New York from an organization here in the county, Mennonite Central Committee, asking if I would be interested in a position that they had opened there. They wanted to know if I'd be interested in applying for it. And at that point, we'd been in New York about 5 years, and our children were ready to go to junior high school, and we were beginning to feel like it was a good time to make another change. So I did accept that job. That was the first time that we ever made a major move based on a career or a job for me. And that was an experience for Jerry and me to work through just in and of itself.
Was it an experience for you, Lynette, to have that family decision based on your career, based on just cultural upbringing and things of that nature? Did you kind of have to work through that, that the female career decision would lead the family?
Well, we did. What made that easier is that we were both united in our desire to come back to our home area, and
okay.
that was opening the door. So
sure.
there was no question about whether or not we wanted to do it.
I see.
But it was more difficult, I think, for my husband, Jerry, who didn't know what he was going to be doing when we moved here, and that created some level of uneasiness.
Well, sure, but there's a great attraction there, not only coming back to your home area, but also you having an opportunity to join what we recognize, Mennonite Central Committee, as one of the world's most efficient and effective relief organizations. That had to be a great experience for you to serve there for a period of time.
That was a wonderful experience. I worked there for 15 years in two different roles. First, I worked as the director of their U.S. service programs. It was a program that placed volunteers in different cities and rural areas around the United States. And so I got to travel from many places between here and California and Florida, visiting these programs and supporting those workers. And that was a wonderful experience of exposure to people and the world as I hadn't known it before.
Sure. And then you emerged into a different role from there?
I did. After 6 years in that position, I was appointed executive director of Mennonite Central Committee U.S. That's the national body of the international program.
So that was really your first opportunity in an executive leadership role, and you probably had some things to learn there. Can you remember what some of the impact was on you of what was being demanded of you at the executive leadership level?
Well, I was a little bit scared about that.
Haven't we all been?
It was one of those decisions where I had to decide, I don't really feel qualified for this. I don't feel ready for it, but how does one get ready and qualified for something like this? And I decided the only way one could really do that was to take what I'd already learned and experienced and take the jump and say yes.
You could either wade in or dive in. It sounds like you dove.
I dove.
Can you remember thinking that there were certain things that were called for as a leader that you felt maybe inadequate to provide? And how did you overcome that feeling of inadequacy?
Well, that's a good question, Roger. I certainly did feel inadequate in a lot of ways, although I was pretty sure, I was so confident in my communication abilities and my ability to listen and care and pay attention and act on what I heard.
The things that we talked about at the beginning.
Things that we talked about at the beginning were really important to me, and I had a lot of confidence, even in my lack of experience and my uneasiness, that I would be able to overcome that and make a good contribution.
So you came to leadership maybe having some of the intangibles, the soft skills, shall we say, as a leading edge of your leadership, and then maybe had to learn your way into some of the more strategic or tangible elements of organizational leadership, financial management, resource management, strategic planning, things of that nature was almost an OJT experience for you, I would imagine.
That's exactly right. I felt confident in the soft skills, but I needed to learn the harder ones and was really looking forward to learning the harder ones because I felt like my skill set was incomplete before that.
Well, sure. And I think this, what's interesting about this conversation, I didn't really know that before, Lynette, is that is more uncommon than common. We often elevate people to leadership positions because we're confident about their competence in a functional role, such as perhaps a chief financial officer or a vice president of sales or something of that nature that has performed very, very well in a hard skill at a leadership level. And then they come into the leadership role and realize at some point that some of the skills that you described and we referred to as soft skills, really need to be practiced and mastered in order to be effective as a leader. And it's interesting to see you having come to it almost from the opposite of what we often observe.
And I think a good deal of that credit would go to the organization that called me, Mennonite Central Committee, because that organization places so much emphasis on relationships and communication, taking time to drink tea with people and learn to know them.
Now you're with Philhaven Behavioral Healthcare Services in an executive role. Can you tell us a little bit about your responsibilities there?
My primary responsibilities are giving direction to the Human Resource Department. We have a staff of 8 people in the department, and we are in charge of all of the things related to employee welfare, from taking care of their benefits to their making sure they get paid and working with them and managers on issues related to work performance and productivity and making sure that we are providing the kind of environment where employees can excel in those ways.
That's outstanding. And of course, we've been so privileged here to approach you about the possibility of working with North & Shantz as an affiliated consultant. And you've been so kind as to make some of your time available to do that. And I'm interested in hearing about maybe some of the first experiences that you've had working along with us and working for the benefit of our clients at North & Shantz. What were some of your initial impressions as to how we approached and tried to help some of the clients that we were working with?
My initial impression was back from as early as the time that I accompanied you to meet with a company that you had been working with for a number of years.
Okay.
I remember coming back.
I'll try and figure out who that company is as you talk here.
I remember the next day speaking with my supervisor at Philhaven, the CEO, and telling him how impressed I was with the way the employees at all levels of that organization were engaged in making sure that the organization, that the company was successful in having figured out their own piece of that. And so as you sat around the table with all them, everybody contributed. And I just found that fascinating to know that a company that was having some difficulties and the future was uncertain had turned itself around by getting the employees engaged at the level that they were.
And not all of us as leaders, Lynette, come easily to that equation because it's a very methodical type of equation and it sometimes demands a loss of control to some degree on our part. And of course, as you know, and as you've observed, one of the cornerstones of our consulting philosophy is to engage people in conversation about the future and allow them to influence the future from the experiences that they've had as individuals and as managers. But it takes time to do that. And there's also a certain amount of risk inherent in the leadership of an organization saying, I'm going to create an environment here in which people's influence can emerge in this organization and can have an effect on our strategy. And it's a very, very methodical way to lead an organization. And those of us who battle with the impatience gene, and that is a gene with which I happen to be fairly familiar personally, it can be very difficult.
It can be very difficult. And I also battle with that myself. I grew up with a father who said, everything must be done now. A mother who said, everything that's worth doing takes time and must be done right. And so I think all my life I've been trying to hold those two together and figuring out how we can do it right and how we can do it quickly. And I think the building of a team is not something that you do quickly or overnight. It's like you say, a step-by-step process of engagement and letting go and pulling people back toward a center again and then going from there.
And takes tremendous energy on the part of a leader or a leadership team to stay with the ebbs and flows of engaging other people in organizational life, because as they're engaging other people in organizational life, they're also, by the way, managing their own lives, which has significant ebbs and flows to them. And their energy and their ability to contribute is certainly related to the things that are happening in their own life and their own personal development and leadership development. And so there's naturally an ebb and flow to that over against the demands of organizational accomplishment. And I think that's one of the hardest things for us as leaders is to be patient with that process while still being attentive to the accomplishment needs of the organization. Just a tremendous paradox, I think, that leaders have to work with on an ongoing basis.
It really is, to pay attention to the ebb and flow and know when to move with it and when to pull things in again and always keeping a particular focus in mind of where you need to go.
Lynette, it's been such a pleasure to have you here today. I appreciate the insights you shared, and I'd love to know if there's just one maybe skill, leadership skill, that you would like to emphasize as being essential to executive leadership growth.
I think probably what is more essential to executive leadership growth than anything else is to never be satisfied with where you're at, but always looking for room for improvement, because there are always places where we can do better, regardless of how good we are. It becomes dangerous if we ever just settle in where we are. So to look for improvement all the time.
And we need to exemplify that, take the first step ourselves, and then let our people know that that's what's expected in the organization and that's what will be rewarded.
Yes.
Lynette, thanks so much for being here today. I had a wonderful time in this conversation. Learned some new things myself, and I just thank you for being part of our team and look forward to continuing to do good things on behalf of our clients together. Have a great day, everyone.
North & Shantz continues to provide direction for your future through sustained relationships. We identify issues by conducting assessments, provide assistance during organizational transitions, and develop leaders through coaching and accountability. As always, thank you for listening to Straightforward.